Good morning, everyone. I am Pastor Zach Ebarb, and this is Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach. So today we are going to continue our look at the historical books of the Old Testament. As you know, in our last episode, we got through Joshua and Judges, and I kind of left you on a depressing note, didn't I? You know, Joshua, people go in and they start to take over, but as the book comes to an end, we see that they can't win their campaigns, they're not following God, they're not paying attention to the things that they need to be doing. And then we usher into this period in the Judges, under these military rulers that God brings into place to save the people from their continual sin, that seven cycle series that we had talked about. Well, I want to brighten the time period a little bit for you. I want to brighten the period of the Judges somewhat for you with the next two books that we have to discuss today. I had contemplated saving 1 Samuel and putting it into the same mix as 2 Samuel. However, we're going to go ahead and cover Ruth and 1 Samuel today. Now, Ruth is a very unique book. It's probably one of my more favorite books. Ruth is a very strong woman, a very interesting woman, somebody that definitely should be a role model to many women today. She ends up in this very unique situation, okay? So when we look at this book, obviously, we know by the title that it's about a woman named Ruth, right? It's a little bit clear in the sense of this is going to be who we talk about. However, it leaves out that we are going to be talking about probably one of the greatest love stories ever written. A true love story, not a romanticized what you and I think of as a love story today, okay? American love stories are more lust stories than love stories. And so this book is going to cover very quickly, very small amount, the love, devotion, and redemption between two people and this family, okay? And what it's going to present is this Moabite woman, Ruth, who is going to go back home to Israel with her mother-in-law, Naomi, from Moab, and is going to try and take care of her mother-in-law as best as she can. And they're going to run into this guy named Boaz. And Boaz is going to be an Old Testament type of Christ, not meaning that he is a Christ, but rather when we say type, we mean that he is going to, with his actions and his character, portray a characteristic about God that's going to help to teach a lesson. And what he's going to be portraying is the goal or the redeemer of the family, okay? And so before we get any further into that, let's talk about who wrote the book of Ruth. We have no idea. Some say that it might have been Samuel himself. Others say that due to the fact that David is discussed towards the end of the book of Ruth, that's not possible. It's unlikely because it talks about David becoming king and Samuel had died before David was crowned king officially. I would say that more than likely, it was Samuel himself who wrote this, just because there are references to David being coronated, made king, doesn't mean that Samuel could not have already known that was going to come to pass. How often is it that God says, this is going to happen, that what God says is going to happen doesn't happen? Well, obviously, the answer is anything God deems is going to happen is going to come to fruition at some point, and Samuel may have just wrote that in preeminence. Or there may have been another prophet that came and finished off the end of the book of Ruth. I would not allow the mystery behind the authorship of Ruth, though, discredit the story itself and what's going to happen, especially since the genealogy of David is going to have a very important keystroke with the story of Ruth. And so now why it's going to lighten up the period of the Judges for you is that Ruth is actually written in the latter times of the book of Judges. Really, if we were going to read the Bible chronologically, I know that's a big thing now. If we were going to read the Bible chronologically, we would insert Ruth about three quarters of the way in the stories of Judges, all right? And I told you guys that Judges has some overlapping periods in it. There's kind of this judge is on the scene while this judge is on the scene. There's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts. But about three quarters of the way into the period of Judges, we would stop reading what was going on with Israel itself and look at this young woman, Ruth. More than likely, it's written around about 1100 BC, okay? And you remember from last week, our timeline for the book of Judges. And so, about three quarters of the way in, we have this story of Ruth. And it has a very beautiful theme. The literary structure, of course, is narrative, right? This is a story. We're going to be talking about this young woman who forsakes her own people to take care of her mother-in-law and return back to Israel with her mother-in-law to make sure that Naomi is okay. You need to understand for the book of Ruth that in this day and time, a woman without a husband was a very bad situation to be in. Now, I know for any of our women that are listening, you go, yeah, I see how it is. They didn't have any rights. No, they ain't got nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that in this day and time, a woman without a husband, there's no income coming in. There's no land ownership. They had just as many rights. They were just as important. However, to be able to own land and to maintain land within a family in Israel, there had to be a male heir. There had to be somebody who would take his father's place. And so when we get into this idea of redemption, which is going to be the entire theme, yes, there's this beautiful love story. Yes, there's this these two individuals who are obeying God and God's law, and they have a faith that makes no sense for the time period, okay? This is happening in Israel's darkest time in history, that there's these two truly faithful, God-called individuals who are following God's law to a T, despite the fact that everybody around them is saying, hey, you can do otherwise. In fact, there's even a time where Boaz orders one of his servants to tell the younger men to stay away from Ruth to protect Ruth, because in that day and time, it was very common for a woman to get raped, especially a woman who was unmarried or alone out in the field. There was no husband to protect her, okay? And so we have all of these things going on, but you need to key in on the fact that our theme is redemption, okay? That is the purpose of this story. And what's beautiful about it is, yes, we see this redemption of a family, okay? Naomi and her husband left Israel during a famine and went to Moab. Now, as many of you probably know, God told the people of Israel what? If you abide in the land, I will what? Bless you. I'll take care of you. So there's this hard time that comes, and they immediately buckle, leave, go to Moab where things look better. And while they're at Moab, Naomi's husband dies, and Naomi's two sons die. And so now we have Naomi and her two daughter-in-laws, and Naomi realizes that it's time to go home. That the reason all these bad things have happened, the reason she's lost her husband and her two sons, is because of their lack of faith and trust in God to take care of them during this hard time in Israel. And now, as punishment, they have lost all of this, and now she's a lone woman. And she realizes that it is time to go back home. Okay? And as she's going back home, her other daughter-in-law's name is Orpah. I may be pronouncing that incorrectly, or I may be getting it mixed up or not have all the letters in there. It's a little early this morning, okay? Starts with an O, though, all right? And so she goes to Ruth and Orpah, and she says, look, I've got to go back home. You two are still young. You can still get married. You know, it's too late for me, but it's not too late for you. Okay, that's basically the gist of it. Return to your families. Find yourself some other husbands. Have a nice life. And as she's leaving, Orpah, of course, says, all right, well, you're right. I'm going to go back home. I'm going to do what I need to do. She's still heartbroken because she loves Naomi, but at the same time, you had to do what you had to do to take care of yourself. But Ruth, and I don't want you to throw Orpah under the bus, guys. It made sense for Orpah to do what she did. She had no responsibility to Naomi. Naomi was not at all her problem. And not only that, but like I said, this time period for women, it was a very bad time period. Men did whatever they wanted to do, and if you were strong enough to fight them off, then fantastic. You could, you know, do what you needed to do. But most of the time, bad things happen to women. In fact, in the period of Judges, there's a man who lets his wife get raped, and then he goes out and cuts her all up and gets rid of the body, basically, while she's barely alive. There's some terrible things that happen during this time period for women. But Ruth clinged to Naomi. Ruth's like, no. Your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. I will take care of you. Where you sleep, I'll sleep. What you eat, I'll eat. All these things. She completely dedicates herself to Naomi, which is a beautiful a sign of the love that she has for this woman. And so when they return home is when we get to our redemption story, right? We have the problem, which is that all the family has died. And now we have to go back to Israel. We got to go back to the land that was given to us by God. And then we got to figure out what we're going to do from there, right? This is kind of a difficult situation. And this whole story is going to cover 12 years of time in the book of Judges. And so we get back home, we start the story of redemption. We're going to see the redemption of Naomi's family back to what it was supposed to be. Boaz will marry Ruth and raise up an heir to the family, which was part of the Levitical law. However, we also see in this the future redemption of the nation. Ruth and Boaz are part of the genealogy of David the king, okay? So we know that when we go through this period of Judges, we're going to hit Samuel. Samuel's my favorite guy of all time in the Bible, next to Paul, okay? Samuel is bad to the bone. He doesn't take nothing off nobody, and if we're not doing it according to God's will, we're not doing it, period. And so we have that little light period, but then the people demand they want a king. We get Saul, and under Saul, it's basically like the period of Judges again. But when we get to David, there becomes this spiritual revival. There becomes this time where things look like they're going to get good. And I'm not going to lie to you, David's going to mess that up towards the end of his life. However, there's this kind of a redemption, kind of this breaking of the cycle under David. But even bigger than that, all the way in the period of Judges, God is writing the redemptive plan for the entire world through the love of these two individuals, because David's bloodline is going to beget who? Well, Jesus Christ, right? So we have all of these timelines of redemption that are born in this little itty-bitty book in the Old Testament. And so to kind of give you an overview of this entire book, all of its narrative, chapters 1, verse 1 through 19, takes place in Moab. That's the death of the family, Ruth's decision to stay with Naomi, Naomi's decision to go home, all of these things. From chapter 1, verse 19 to chapter 3, verse 1, we're going to see Ruth's devotion and care for Naomi. She goes out to the field, she takes care of her, she does all these things, right? And so all of this is going to take place in the fields of Bethlehem. That's where we return home to, okay? Then Naomi goes, hey, Ruth, you know, you could always ask Boaz to marry you, you know, make him hold up his end of the deal according to Levitical law. Naomi says, typical mother-in-laws or basically moms in general, she kind of becomes Ruth's mother. And that, hey, you know, you go down to the threshing floor, uncover his feet, lay down, and we'll talk about that when we get there. It's a very interesting story. But so from chapters 3, verse 1 to chapter 4, verse 1, Ruth makes her request for redemption by Boaz, or basically asks Boaz to marry her. And the story becomes not about Ruth and Naomi anymore, it becomes about Ruth and Boaz. And this takes place and on a threshing floor in Bethlehem. And then, of course, there's Ruth's reward of redemption by Boaz, meaning that he marries her, he raises up an heir to the family. Our story comes to completion, and that's chapter 4, verse 1 through chapter 4, verse 22. So as you see, it's a very short book, but there is so much in it, guys, about it's this small little book that shapes and defines the future of the Israelite nation for the rest of the of time, for the rest of the period of existence until God comes back again. And so I want you to kind of highlight real quick, because like I said, it's a little book. There's not a lot to talk about. But I want you to highlight the fact, first of all, Ruth is a Moabitess, meaning she's a descendant of Lot's son, who was one of the ancestral children. Y'all kind of remember Lot having relations with both of his daughters and two Canaanite nations basically coming out of that, one of them being the Moabites. She is a descendant of that line, of this all this sinful line, this nation that's going to cause trouble for Israel, yet she is in the bloodline of Jesus Christ. It's just further proof that God can use anyone to do any job. There is nothing that defines you other than that, the decisions that you make. Doesn't matter where you come from, what your family was like, any of those things. If you make yourself available to God, if you get saved and become a servant of the King, He can use you in any way He deems necessary. And so we have, I want you to highlight, of course, that we have this outsider who becomes part of the redemptive plan. We talked about the foreshadowing of redemption, how this is a redemption not only for the people in the future, but also redemption of the entire world. And I also want you to mark in the fact that of Boaz being a very distinguished man in this story. I think Boaz is one of the only men that we read about in the Bible. And not saying that he doesn't sin, guys. I'm not saying that. But he's the only man that you read about in the Bible that doesn't have a downfall. Next to maybe Daniel and a few of the others, he's the only one that comes out of the Bible without a black eye, without doing the wrong thing. He focuses on doing the right thing in a time period where the wrong thing was even okay to do in the eyes of the people. So we have this man who, his character is more than just a show. It's more than just a facade. It is true dedication to God, and that is the kind of servant you and I should want to strive to be. So that is the book of Ruth in a nutshell. Now let's get into one of my even more probably favorite stories because of the character of Samuel in 1 Samuel. So obviously, in our title alone, 1 Samuel is going to probably be about who? Samuel, right? I know that the rest of it's kind of misleading. What happened is that when the Bible was translated from Hebrew to Greek for some ridiculous reason, we decided to separate 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel into two books, okay, 1 and 2. When in all reality, the book of Samuel was one whole narrative, okay? Which is why I really would like to talk about both of them, but we just don't have that kind of time for our podcast, as well as the fact because we're 20 minutes in already, and we usually try to keep these 45 minutes to an hour. As well as the fact that the title Samuel becomes misleading by the book of 2 Samuel. We're going to talk about that, okay? But 1 Samuel title is not misleading. It's going to be about the Samuel, number one guy, A-team, okay? And Samuel is going to be another type of Christ, all right? He is a judge, a prophet, and a priest, okay? He is going to be this three-in-one the same way that Jesus Christ is. He came as a prophet, and he is the judge of the entire world, but he is also our high priest who makes intercession for us. And the book of 1 Samuel is going to come in, and it's going to obviously cover the life of Samuel, but we're also going to talk about Saul and David, okay? Sadly, Samuel dies in 1 Samuel. Okay, he's not around for very long, which is heartbreaking because he is one of the coolest guys in the Bible. However, we're going to be talking about these three prominent figures, and this book is basically anonymous, okay? The authorship by tradition is given to Samuel, but obviously there is a whole lot to the entire story of 1 and 2 Samuel that Samuel himself was not alive for. It's very likely that this book was put together around 900 BC, okay? Basically around the time when the kingdom is either already divided or about to become divided into the northern and southern kingdoms under Rehoboam and Jeroboam, okay? And so... regardless of that, I would say very likely Samuel authored the first part, and then probably Nathan and Gad and maybe even some other prophets from the school of prophets that Samuel is going to set up are the ones who came in and filled in the rest of the dots over all of this period of history leading up to the division of the kingdom, okay? Again, it's irrelevant to the fact of there being one specific author. That doesn't change what happened. It doesn't change the history of the people. And it doesn't change the fact that even from a secular historical point of view, there is a lot that can be proven to have had happened in the book of Samuel. Okay? Or in this case, 1 Samuel. So, we know it's written, finished up, put together around 900 BC. We know that it is more than likely written by numerous authors. And so as we're getting into this book, when we get into theme and literary structure, this is all history, okay? This is all about what happens, what's going to go on with the people, and it's going to cover one of the most interesting periods in Israel's history. This is the first time Israel is going to go from a theocracy who is under the occasional judge or this military guy who comes in and saves the people from their own stupidity, to a monarchy, which was supposed to still be a theocracy, but the reality is, beloved, is that once you have a king, the people start to look at the physical king as the leader and no longer are paying attention to God. This happens under Saul. This happens under David. This happens under Solomon. This happens under Rehoboam, Jeroboam, all these guys, okay? Excuse me. They're going to be moving away from a true government where God is in charge to this man who is supposed to be acting as God's ambassador to the people and supposed to rule according to the way God says that he is supposed to rule. But that doesn't stick for very long. And God told the people that. God warned the people that this is what would happen. To be honest with you, if we could, even in this country, go back to living according to God's Levitical law, okay? You do this, this happens. Not saying keep the feast and all those things, not the spiritual intent, but the actual law itself. I think every country would be better for it if they lived according to it. It allows for true freedom. It allows for a lifestyle that's dedicated to God and doing God's work the way God asked for it to be done. It allows for everybody to live according to what God says is right and what is wrong. It covers things equally, fairly, justly, but nobody cares about my opinion, okay? So, here we go. So that would, to give you an overview, this is what's going to happen. In the book of 1 Samuel, we cover 94 years of history, okay? Chapter 1 through chapter 4 is the first transition of leadership, okay? Eli to Samuel. Eli is the high priest at the time that Samuel is born, and Eli is a joke. Him and his two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they are all jokes. They don't live up to the standard at all. They don't care about God. They don't live according to God. Eli kind of has this moment of revival once Samuel comes into the temple, because he can see that Samuel is going to be God's man, that Samuel's going to do what's right. But despite that, Eli just doesn't really get his act together all the way, guys. He blows it, for lack of a better way of putting it. He has this young man that's brought into him. He has the opportunity to learn from his mistakes, to throw his two sons out, to get his life together, and he just won't do it. He just won't. Like many parents, he gives in to his children and to making sure that his children are happy instead of worrying about God being happy and dealing with his children in accordance with what God has dictated for us to do as parents. And so we have this first four chapters dedicated to the death of Eli, Hophni, Phinehas, Samuel coming into that position, as well as we lose the Ark of the Covenant in battle with the Philistines, okay? This is the falling away of the period of the judges. It's about to come to an end. And the main topic of those chapters is obviously Eli. Samuel is a little kid. Eli is an adult. That's what's going on. From chapters 4 to 8, we get into Samuel, all right? Samuel comes in and he's a powerhouse. He starts straightening things out, straightening people out, taking care of business, getting everything back to what it's supposed to be under God. And then from chapter 8 to 13, we see a second transition of leadership, which is Samuel to Saul. Okay? The people start demanding a king. They're not content to be unlike everybody else. They want everything that everybody else has. They want this monarchy, blah, 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 blah. And so God gives them what they want while you're telling Samuel to warn them. And so we have this transition of leadership. Chapters 13 through 15 is going to be all about the reign of Saul. And during this time period, towards the beginning of chapter 13, kind of the end of chapter 13, we see Samuel dies. Okay, Saul does some really, really dumb things. He doesn't obey God's word. He doesn't complete the task that God's asked him to complete, and Samuel cuts off contact with him altogether until the end of his life. And so that ushers in Saul's ability to rule the people completely without having this other guy on the side who the people were still willing to listen to, that kind of split leadership a little bit, okay? And so now we've entered into this period of the rise of the kings. Then, from chapter 15 all the way to chapter 31, is the third transition of leadership, which is Saul to David. This is Saul chasing David in the wilderness, all the nonsense that goes on, Saul finding out he's going to die in battle from a medium who brings Samuel's ghost back, okay? And this is going to cover mostly the life of David. And then 2 Samuel, of course, is going to deal a lot with David as well. So you see, there's a lot going on in this whole story. There's three big characters. There's a lot of time period that's covered, a lot of moving parts, a lot of transitions. And there's a lot of tragedy in this book too as well, guys. And all of this takes place in Canaan or in Israel, all right? And so to kind of highlight it, obviously, Samuel, I've told you a lot about him already. He is a very important character in this story. He is what sets the ground floor for the nation of Israel to start getting back to what it's supposed to be prior to Saul. He ends the darkness of the time period of Judges with his leadership and rule. Well, then we also have, I mentioned, the capture of the Ark, right? Hophni and Phinehas, Eli's children, they decide to lose the Ark. They take it to battle, thinking that because they have taken it to battle, God will bless them and everything will be just hunky-dory. And instead, they lose the battle and the Philistines take it. And then the Philistine people are plagued by it. They move it around from city to city until finally they end up sending it back with a couple of gifts. And I'm not going to tell you what those are. It's a very interesting story, but we're going to get into it eventually. And then, of course, we need to talk about the Philistines. The Philistines are a very prominent threat throughout the book of 1 Samuel. These guys were more than likely colonists that came and lived on the coast many, many years prior to everything that's going to occur in Samuel. And they become Israel's a number one enemy. Any chance they get, they're fighting with Israel all the time. Fighting. Whether it's over land, religion, whatever, they always have some reason to be at odds with Israel. And they're going to basically become obsolete under the rulership of David. They're going to get their hind ends whipped enough that they start to not matter as much. There'll be a little bit of a rise out of them from time to time. But we're going to fight a lot of wars with the Philistines. In fact, just to kind of give you off the head, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8 prominent wars or battles that are going to take place with the Philistines during the time of 1 Samuel. And then, of course, there is Saul. Okay? And guys, Saul's story is truly is sad. It's truly tragic. It starts out so good. He starts out doing what he's supposed to be doing, but it basically ends in abject failure. It basically comes to this point where we are 110% not doing what God's asked us to do. The Spirit of God leaves Saul. It's a very tragic tale for this king. And so with Saul's life, you need to know that he starts out good, he's going to end bad for now, all right? As far as his decline and fall goes, there's a couple of instances that bring about his abject failure as a king. First of all, there's a presumptuous sacrifice that he makes. Samuel says, you're going to lose the kingdom for this decision. He decides to make a sacrifice that he is not allowed to make. He makes a foolish curse against his son, Jonathan. That almost results in the death of his son because of his foolishness. He spared Agag and his flocks, which is where him and Samuel finally had their falling out. And it is not only foretold at this point that he's going to lose the kingdom. Samuel says, you have lost the kingdom. Like, you're not, your line will no longer rule over Israel. And then he proceeds to cut Agag into many, many little pieces. It's Samuel, like I said, he don't play. he loses his fellowship with God as a result of continual disobedience. That results in him having many unanswered prayers in the book of 1 Samuel. He decides to visit a medium instead of trying to fix his relationship with God. To ask about a war he's about to enter into with the Philistines. And she calls Samuel's ghost up completely by accident. And Samuel says, you're going to die in the battle, you and your children. I'm going back home now. And then ultimately Saul will take his own life, and that is the end of his dynasty. Jonathan dies, all of his sons but Mephibosheth die in the battle. And the only reason Mephibosheth doesn't is because he's a cripple and he's not even in the battle to begin with. However, to kind of highlight some of the better parts of Saul's time as king, He did have a few successful military campaigns against the Philistines to start out with. They're short-lived, but he did have some good battles at the beginning. And then, of course, David is going to be our next big character. And David has a beautiful story of this young guy who's a shepherd, another type of Christ, by the way, who is a shepherd, that he rises to this place of being anointed as king. He's out taking care of the sheep. And then he eventually becomes this great soldier, great warrior, and a king that Israel can rely on. However, by the time we get to 2 Samuel, David, you're going to learn, has a very fatal flaw. And that flaw is that he has a lot of lust towards women and doesn't really care all that much about the role model of marriage, which is one husband and one wife that God established at the very beginning, and that is going to be his ultimate downfall. See, the book of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel, their main purpose is not only to highlight the building of this nation into what it needs to be for Jesus Christ to come on the scene, but it also highlights the fact that, guys, when you and I sin, it reaches to more than just you and me, okay? And when I sin, it doesn't just affect Zach Ebarb. It affects my wife, my daughter, my church, maybe even people connected to them, depending on what it is that has occurred, whether it's a lie, an affair, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Your sin can not only affect other people, it can carry out consequences that last for years. David's big sin, the one everybody knows, of his affair with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah, that sin affects almost 15 to 20 years of his life directly, meaning that there are things that occur directly because of that decision. But then also, guys, he lives with all of those consequences till the day he dies. So it changes his life forever. His desire to have this 15 minutes with this woman and to get away with it ultimately destroys his family, his life, and it ends his kingship on a terrible note, where his son Solomon will come to the throne. And while Solomon is a very good king in the beginning, like his dad, Solomon has the same problem his daddy does. And all of David's sons have the same problems their daddy does, including Amnon, who is going to rape his half-sister. Everybody, oh, no, he's a sicko, he's a weirdo. That's not at all like what David is. Yes, it is, guys. Lust is lust is lust. Doesn't matter how it manifests itself. He could lust it after a goat. It's still lust, and he still learned it from his father. So when you as an adult, when you as a parent, one of the biggest things that you need to take away from those two, from First and then Second Samuel, like we'll talk about next week more in depth, is that when you make a decision to sin, when I say you make the decision, because you do make it, if you're saved, you know better. When you make the decision to sin, make sure before you do it that you take the time to contemplate what it could cost you to have that one moment of sin. So, that is Ruth and 1 Samuel. Obviously, Ruth, beautiful story. 1 Samuel is very good. It's got some tragedy in it. I can't take you away from that. I'm sorry. That's majority of the Bible. There's a lot of tragedy, okay? Because humans, we like to make mistakes and we like to do things we're not supposed to do. However, I want you to be excited for both of these books. It's a very unique period of time. Ruth is a beautiful story. 1 Samuel, you're going to see some guys that you're like, yes, way to go. And then you're going to see some things where you go, oh, why did you do that? But hopefully you'll also see yourself in that. You too make mistakes. So make sure to take the time to go look at both of those books. You don't have to read them all the way. You know, I told you we're going to go through them together. But take the time to go look at them, especially Ruth. Ruth is very short. and get acquainted with those stories. I will see you next week at bright and early on Monday morning. This is Zach Ebarb, Studies Through the Bible. Get out of here. Go open your Bible and study.